Welcome to the Cap Tech Podcast with President Sims. I'm president of Capital Technology University. We're a small, private, nonprofit, fully accredited university in Laurel, Maryland. We're focused on building and enhancing careers for industry in demand areas. We have been in business since 1927, and we focus on STEM or management of STEM degrees at the bachelor's, master's, and doctoral levels. Today, we have Marty Reynolds, Managing Director of Cybersecurity for Airlines for America. Welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for coming on. To start off the podcast, could you kind of give us your background?
Yeah, absolutely. So I just recently retired from the Air Force after 29 years. Had a career that spanned, I would say, kind of five areas. One is I had the amazing fortune to fly airplanes. So I did that for about 20 years, mostly flew C-130s. And in that long career, if you will, I had the opportunity to lead folks as a commander at the squadron group and wing level. So that was probably one of the funnest parts about the career. The other part I got the chance to do too is I just spent quite a bit of time in cyber. So I started off as a weather guy back in the day. And one of the big things I did was manage a network. So that was my first introduction to IT, computers, and all that kind of thing. And then later, I had the chance to go to the Pentagon, do cyber operations and policy. And then most recently, I was a deputy commander for the Air Force Cyber. And I was responsible for a team that was responsible for the entire Air Force network and also Air Force cyber operations. So that's where I got a chance to do a lot of cyber operations and leading teams that did that. The other part that I got to do too is, I talk about weather, but the military is great because I get a chance to do a lot of education and training. So I love education. So they kept sending me back to get degrees. And so I had the chance to go and get a number of master's degrees and an extra bachelor's degree. So that was, that's my career wrapped up in the military. And then most recently I've transitioned. And as you mentioned, I'm now working at a trade association doing cybersecurity policy.
That's great. There's a huge demand for cybersecurity professionals. All the universities across America graduating, thousands of students still can't fill the market demand, that's for sure. So we need more graduates in the cybersecurity area.
Absolutely.
We also, at Capital, where we, besides our cybersecurity program, we also have specialty areas of cybersecurity for aviation, cybersecurity for construction. It's, it is a skill set that some folks come out of the programs and they actually go in and work the systems, or they may manage the whole cybersecurity process. So again, as you can see from the current news, all the issues with cybersecurity, we also here at Capital Tech started degrees in critical infrastructure. And what we wanted to do with that was to highlight the technologies that's used in facilities that can be a cyber attack. So an example would be a refinery or a manufacturing facility that has pumps and valves, and that's operated through the industrial internet of things, through the operational technology, which can be attacked by a foreign government cyber. So we in those programs, we highlight how that can be an issue as well.
Yeah, huge demand. I mean, even today, I was just looking through some statistics, there's like the number of open positions across the U.S., there's 900,000 open positions right now, cybersecurity. And as you said too, a few years ago, a decade ago, you say, well, I'm going to do cybersecurity, and you could probably just be a generalist. But today, you just mentioned the work Capital's doing too in terms of aviation, is that you need to have some practical, experience or training to understand those systems that you're trying to protect. And there's a lot of uniqueness and control systems and everything else. So the demand, right now for professionals in this, it's just through the roof, and it's going up every day as we keep connecting things.
Yeah, exactly. To help out in our areas of cyber here at the master's level, we have leveling classes. So say you have a degree, or you're in a different area, or you're working a different segment, you can take three classes to help level you out and then take the whole cyber degree program. So we're trying to give multiple ways that you can jump into the career field that certainly, as we mentioned, high demand, whatever segment you go into. And we, like for the critical infrastructure, we tie it back to the Department of Homeland Security 16 sectors, you know, that they say are critical infrastructure. When you look at those, the majority of those are facilities, not like the banking industry, which is one of
right.
them. But, you know, a facility, whether it's a dam that produces power or manufacturing that produces food or any of those things, they all have a facility specific type of attackable point. And then today, of course, whether you're looking at smart cities or even your home, smart homes, those are points of attack points for cyber that could be cheaply done from a foreign government or foreign entity without them physically even being here.
Yeah, and that ecosystem you're just talking about is just expanding, you know. And I think there's a, you know, unique nexus happening right now too. What happened at Colonial and a number of the other incidents that happened over the last year is that people are starting to realize as you connect more, security has to be part of that. It has to be baked in. It can't be an afterthought. And so that needs professionals that understand how to do that up front. And you know, the other unique thing that's going on right now too is if you're graduating from a program, then, you know, years ago you would say, you know, folks would come in and say, yeah, I'm really looking for folks that have the background and experience. And today, because there's such a shortfall of, you know, talented folks in these professions, that companies are more and more interested in taking on folks that have the degree and they do an on-job training and others to get them up to speed to where they want to go. In fact, some of them are actually seeing there's some real practical benefit it too. It's like, if you can start at a company and then start gradually working up and become one in management, everything else, the loyalty factor that occurs actually improves. So yeah, it's a great time to be graduating from any of these programs that have a technical background. There's definitely demand for you.
Oh yeah, we get inquiries from all sorts of industries, whether it's the construction industry, huge demands for both the management or the trades, aviation industry, computer science. I mean, Verizon was looking for more technical people when they contacted us, and we want to certainly help them get more people, but our problem is that we just need a larger volume of students coming through the program because they all get jobs upon graduation.
Yeah, well, you know, and I think what's interesting too in this is that I think a lot of folks, when they go think, oh, I'll do cybersecurity, they're probably thinking that I'll end up working at, you know, maybe at best, you know, I'll work at an Apple or Google or work for an IT organization. But you just mentioned a whole bunch of just case studies of places that need that same expertise. And in the aviation sector, you know, people may not necessarily go, I'm going to go into IT, you know, cybersecurity profession, and end up in the aviation world. But man, we need folks that have that background and experience, because, you know, it's just important for us to have a skill set that protects our systems as well. So, yeah, and that's in the military and in the private sector as well too. I mean, there's a recognition that, you know, as you connect more and more things, you need to protect them. Mm-hmm.
So, from your all your positions that you've had either in the military or industry, what do you think universities should be doing best to prepare students in these degree programs, technical degree programs, to walk out the door and be productive and successful for the companies that are hiring them or the military?
Yeah, I guess I'll start with, you know, one of the things my dad would always tell folks, he's a superintendent of a small school in Montana. And one of the things he would say is that if you have a degree, what that tells employers is that you have the ability to learn. And I think that's a great, great quote, because it, you know, you need technical experiences, you know, like what universities offer in the curriculum, and then what you show as you graduate with this degree, as if you have a technical competence. But what employers are actually kind of looking for too, and beyond that, is what else do you get through that experience of a university system? You know, you have to learn time management. You also have to work hard. You know, you had to set goals, and you had to achieve those goals. You had to work with teams. You know, those other intangible elements that go with getting a degree are incredibly important. And as folks go to an interview, especially as they start working, those are the kinds of skill sets that actually start leveraging right away, you know? And so yeah, having the technical experience, you know, at most universities, I would say, they understand that and they bake those into the experience that you get from the university. But from a employer perspective, I think that can't be undersold.
Whenever a student graduates and goes out to the industry or military, what would be their first skills that they would learn, or type of job? What would be their standard first type of position they take, and what would they learn in that position?
Yeah, no, that's a good question too. I think a lot of cases what folks end up doing is, start with, the basic IT skills that you'd expect, work, towards network protection, work in the center that actually where all the trouble tickets come in, wanted to get, a primary basic understanding of the network and the systems and ecosystem that organization is concerned and concerned about and wants to protect. So whether it's private or, the federal government, there's certainly differences between networks, so you want to have people come in and learn the practical differences of those networks. In some cases, you might learn, have a certain software background and you understand, the certain parameters of like learning simple coding that goes through it. But you may go to an organization, like, for example, I was in charge of an organization that was still using COBOL. And so we had to bring people in and teach them this old language because it was, it was a system of national security importance, but there weren't people who could do it. But what we really wanted was people who could learn how to do it and have the practical understanding of background. So I think what you end up doing is you end up starting there. But one of the things I'd offer folks as they leave a university experience and they start going into their career is that, I think there's a time where you're going to do a lot of IT technical kinds of work. And that's something that if that's what you want to do in your entire career, then there's a career for you to do that. But a lot of times people end up transitioning into managing people who do that work. And so one of the things I typically offer to folks is that if given the opportunity to learn about how to do management and managing people and learning how to lead teams, don't miss out on those opportunities, because as you grow in your profession, the chances of you leading teams is going to be very high. And what you don't want to do is show up and go, okay, now you're in charge of a small team and you've never thought about it or even tried it or even thought through it. So I think that's where they start. I think naturally people move up into management, things like that.
You're talking about your opportunity to get advanced degrees. Do you think that should be something when you graduate, you should value that you should be thinking of going ahead and getting a master's or a PhD? Is that,
Absolutely.
Think of that,
Absolutely. So I think there's this unique compression period where people graduate from high school and go to college and they think that, I have to figure everything out right away. Like I go to college, I got to figure out the exact degree, the exact route, and then start planning their life out for the next 20, 30 years. And they feel that there's a compression period where they've got to make those decisions. And and these are important decisions, picking a degree is an important decision. But sometimes what happens is like you get into the workforce and you find out that, I like the technical aspect of what I'm doing, but I really enjoy, I know I found this in my own personal experience, is that I really enjoyed working with teams and managing teams. And so when you find that that's your new niche, you may decide that I would want to professionally grow in an advanced degree. I'm telling you, that experience getting an advanced degree is incredibly important. I've had the opportunity at, the Air Force was great to me. I had a chance to do four different advanced degrees. And in each time was a point in my career where I felt like the skills that I got through that experience met the demand that I had for myself and the organization had for me. So, there's times where I think if you want to go and get, like, I got a master's in operations research, which was really, really helpful because I got me to go back and think more technically. And then I also got a chance to get a degree in organizational management, which meant that I now had a better practical experience on how to lead people. And also just learn a little more about myself. You have to know yourself and your own limitations and how do you value your own performance before you start evaluating other performance. So you learn those kind of practical skills. So, and then, you talked about the master's degrees and PhDs, incredibly important, but there's also the executive training and the other types of training most organizations offer that I would just say never pass up the opportunity to learn.
Yeah. I remember whenever I graduated with a bachelor's degree, I thought I would never go back to school again for another degree.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I think I was out working and I was at Savannah River site where I started my career. And after 2 years, I thought maybe I should look into a master's degree. So I was applying for that. But then it dawned on me, had I just taken one class a semester for those 2 years, I would have been almost done. So, it was one of those catch 22s where I really, I missed out on that. But it was an enhancement, I thought, with a master's degree of my writing abilities that was really a plus that I didn't receive at my undergraduate degree. And so, you know, even though my undergraduate degree was technical and construction management, and if you have a technical degree, you know, even a master's degree in something like English is not that bad, because yeah, you're improving your communication skill set after you have your technical skill set. So I kind
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. In fact, what I'd offer to you is that by the time you go back to your master's, you probably have some professional experience. So as you go through class, you actually have like a framework that you can apply the skills that you're learning and understand how you can apply them better. And most of the classes are applicable, or they're application like classes anyway. So yeah, I agree. I think especially for the folks that wait and then go, and especially if they're also going to a master's program while they're at, you know, still working, then they can actually take some of the classes they're doing and apply some of the, you know, the projects to, you know, real world cases that they're working through at work. Yeah, there's so much value in education. I mean, I'm a huge
fan. You know, it's really changed with the online options in higher education that weren't there when I completed my master's and doctorate. I had to go back full time to school, but here at Capital Tech, all of our master's and doctoral degrees are completely online, and that's really to me, that's great, because what we see is a lot of full time people being able to complete those advanced degrees, and it gives them that option. And actually, our doctoral program, we're seeing the largest increase in international students because of the online option in that. So it's, and all of our degrees are industry friendly, which, you know, we really enjoy here at Capital Tech, because we're focused on getting you a good career. That's our main purpose. So and having the option to do something online can expand it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So from your perspective, over the last few years now, COVID's changed things. How has that affected the employees?
Yeah, it's a really interesting time right now, I would say, for all employers, employees. You know, teleworking is fundamentally changed, and in some ways actually accelerated the existing trends. So, you know, I'll go back, let's say 3 years ago, there was a move to start doing more teleworking kinds of work and allowing more flexibility for employees. But clearly, you know, COVID, you know, kind of forced that and accelerated that. I had this unique opportunity. I lived in New York City and I had a fellowship where, you know, I got a chance to go to the fintech organizations and banks, you know, and I got a chance to go see the investment houses and brokerage firms. And one of the questions I'd always ask them is, you know, how do you recruit, engage, and retain your people? And most of it was, you know, the high tech folks, you know, like the cybersecurity professionals, analysts, and things like that. And what I found fascinating about that question is that they typically wanted to talk to myself and the other fellows were all military too. And their question back to us was like, well, how do you do it? You know, you, the military, you know, you all, you know, recruit and retain and all that. So we were curious about how you do it. And what I found is that, you know, in those conversations with people, the types of things that people would want from their work are very similar. Now, it may change a little bit as you grow and your priorities may change, but there's like five fundamental things that I've kind of boiled it down to. And I think when you talk about the COVID changes, what COVID has changed is the acceleration of some of those. So like, you know, pay and benefits are always going to be important to some extent. How much, you know, that depends on the individual and the career field. You want to have an interesting but balanced work. You know, you don't want to go to work and find out that it's not interesting and that what you do isn't meaningful. You want to make sure that there's enjoyment in your work. So, you know, you don't want to go and have a boss that you hate and co-employees that you don't want to work with. You want to go in and feel part of a team and do all that kind of work. You know, you also want to make sure you have career opportunities, you know, that you're not just going in and all you're going to do is the same thing for over and over and over again. And then lastly, you just want to be recognized. And I think what COVID did in this is that, you know, some of those things that elements of those five areas I just talked about, you know, I think that accelerated some of that. You know, it gave employees the opportunity to find opportunities to work on work-life balance, if you will. Like, so if you're working from home, then you can then maybe reprioritize and reschedule yourself around your other activities in life. The challenge in that, there's a couple that I see that I think employers, employees at this point are now really starting to think through. It's like, one is, if you get hired in this teleworking environment and you've never gone into work, then how do you build a cohesive team? How do you get to know your peers, your coworkers, and others? And you may feel disconnected, not just from them, but you may be disconnected to the mission or purpose of your organization. So that's one piece that I think organizations are now really starting to think about. Like, how do I do this? Do I bring people back in maybe, you know, one or two days a week? Or how do I find ways in which I could connect people to it? The other is just this idea of being overstressed. You know, there's this this unique thing going on right now, they're called the Great Resignation, where people feel like they're just overwhelmed. I mean, you know, yes, you can reprioritize your schedule at home. You might be able to do some things with your family and things like that, but you feel like you're just never disconnected. You know, you're always working. You know, you get up in the morning, you're working, you go to bed, you're still working, you're always connected at the house. The demands are high. The work is somewhat a little bit more ambiguous because you can't sit down with teams and work out, flush out maybe, you know, how you want to approach a project. You just kind of do it more iteratively. And so you're starting to feel people are seeing that they're just more stressed out. And so, and then the other is like, you know, this is another interesting dynamic here too, is that as people find that they can telework from anywhere in the United States, and then this company starts saying, hey, we want you to come back to work, people kind of like to live in some places that they never would have originally thought. You know, if you live in the upper Midwest or, you know, up in the Rocky Mountain area, and you like that area, you probably don't want to transition back to a coast. Then that's going to really change the way that employers, employees kind of talk about how am I going to work with you. But yeah, COVID really accelerated some of these conversations. They're already happening, but I think it's here to stay. I think this conversation about teleworking and how we, you know, manage that trade-off that employees have between those five role areas that is talked about is definitely something that employees feel like they're empowered to now take action to.
Yeah, it is a different dynamic. The one thing that I was thinking also is, how do you replicate whenever you're together in a physical, you know, space, and you're coming up with ideas and looking at efficiencies and throwing stuff around like that? How do you replicate that if everybody's separated into their own home office and they're just, you know, focused on their job, they want to get it done, but where do you get that collaborative, you know, type of effort that you receive when you're working in the same facility? How do you do that? You know?
Yeah. And so like the other is like, you know, conferences, you know, we kind of stopped doing those a little bit, or we tried to do it virtual, but I don't know about your experience. But mine is that, you know, the conferences are interesting, but the breaks are more interesting. You know, I find that I can learn more from peers and others, you know, at a break and solve issues and things I couldn't do, you know, listening to the conference. And those just having a materials. And thankfully, they're starting to come back. I mean, we are starting to see more in-person, you know, interactions and all that. So, but it definitely accelerated the way that we approach work, that's for sure.
Yeah, and with conferences, what do you think is the importance for an individual to join associations? What do they get a lot of value at an association that's, you know, connected to their industry? Is there, I guess when you participate in it, what do you think the real value of that membership is?
Yeah, I especially as I've gotten further in my career, I've really appreciated what associations do. So, you know, they represent the interests of the folks that are part of that association. So whether it's, you know, if you're a, you know, in an IT profession and you belong to an IT association, they're tremendously helpful in resources. So, for example, as an IT professional, like right now, one of the things I'm doing is I've signed up and joined an association, and they have a training program that actually helps me get a certification I didn't have before. And so, I mean, if I didn't apply to that or it wasn't part of that association, I wouldn't have the resources available to me that if the association didn't exist, I'd have to do it on my own, you know, try to figure out how to, you know, cobble together the training material so that I could pass the certification. The other part of the association too is that, you know, as they have these conferences you just kind of mentioned, it brings you together with other professionals. And so you can actually network and meet other people in this world and in that sector, and hugely valuable. I guess I didn't appreciate it when I was younger, the importance associations actually bring to your profession until I started getting a little bit further up and then joined a few and then starting to see the benefits actually being part of it, especially from a networking and education piece.
Yeah, and there's lots of good information from the meeting.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Like you said, networking is really the key.
Absolutely.
You can find out answers if you have a good enough network that you can ask the right question. And that's where I think the association, plus for young students, like if you're an undergraduate, I think the importance is really networking to figure out which company fits you and your cultural desire to work for. And you get that insight when you're part of an association.
Yeah, absolutely. Man, you hit a great word there. I tell you, as I've gotten a little bit older and a little more experienced, I tell you what, I just think people understate the importance of culture, you know, and I think we take it for granted that, you know, you join an organization. So, you know, my practical professional experience has always been in the military. The military has a culture, obviously, but every organization inside the organization has a culture as well. And those leaders that don't spend time talking and learning about their own individual culture and try to cultivate it in a positive way, man, I tell you, it could just be a disaster if you don't understand it and learn through it. Or if on the other side, if you do enhance your culture and you spend time on it, your organization is just going to blossom and take off. So I agree. Culture is incredibly important there. Networking helps you. Like you can, before you join up and you can ask those questions about a culture, talk to those that are already there. And, you know, you learn an awful lot about an organization through those networking experiences.
Yeah. I mean, you know, advanced degree graduates of a university usually are working full time and have, you know about the different companies, but the undergraduates, that's the real win for them. And if a company doesn't fit their culture, let's say you're a new graduate, 23 years old, and you go to work for a company X and you're there 2 to 3 years and they've spent a lot of money training you, enhancing your abilities. And if you don't find the culture the right fit, you really benefited your next company because they've benefited from what that company has spent on those 2 to 3 years. So it really is something that I think is underlooked because you don't have the access when you're an undergraduate as much. But if you can get involved with associations, because student memberships are usually either free or cheap, it's a great way to connect with where your potential employers may be.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, the five dimensions that he's talked about too, I think those all could be wrapped up in culture. You know, if an organization doesn't value recognition programs and you're seeking some kind of recognition for the work you do, that's a culture thing. You know, if you go to work and you hate working there and you don't have the enjoyment, that could be a culture thing. You know, and in organizations, you know, some what I found too, and I think they make this mistake when they talk about hiring, you know, especially cybersecurity professionals when they have a shortage, is that they lean too heavily on compensation benefits. They say, well, I'll pay you a lot more money. And that may seem attractive at the time, but then you start working for them and you find the other four dimensions I mentioned are out of whack, you know, that you don't enjoy it, you know, that you find that there is no real career opportunity there. The opportunity is not what you expected. There's no recognition. And then quite important, you just don't enjoy it, you know? So, you know, there's a lot to be said about those trade-offs, you know, that happen in there. And then the culture of the organization, I think, sets and dictates how those mission match for employers is when they meet with their employees.
Yeah, and we, you know, we've covered some of this, but what changes do you think employers have made to recruit, engage, and retain recent graduates?
Yeah, no, I think one of the things I've seen that really is new is like kind of what I started a little bit about in terms of if you're coming right out of school, you know, one of the challenges always been is like, well, listen, I want to go in, I'm interested in working there, but they keep saying I have to have experience. And I think most universities today, you know, give you the opportunity to get some practical experience and you can do internships and those kinds of things that you can actually put on a resume and show that you've got some experience. But more and more companies today, because they're really struggling to find, you know, talented people, they're more willing to bring in people and do on the job training. And I, like I said, I think it goes back to, you know, coming up with an ability to connect the individual to the mission and purpose of the organization, and doing that through, you know, on the job training, do that through development. And I think that's a new thing for a lot of folks in the especially in the cybersecurity professional industry. You know, the military, we relied on that. Like, you know, you come in and you're a raw recruit, you go through basic training, and our entire program is based on you not knowing anything about the military when you walk out onto the, you know, basic training grounds, and then we train you all the way through. That is not a standard format for most organizations. They would hire right into the positions and then expect that you have those, you know, experience levels to do it. Today, they're finding that, hey, it's going to be better for us to hire, train, and then that might actually help us retain our folks. And then I think the telework, and we'd already talked about through that too, but you know, the opportunity to provide people this idea of finding balance in their life, I think is something that companies are starting to realize there's real value in emphasizing that, because that's what employees want.
Yeah, it's I think it was moving that way before COVID, but as we can see, there's, you know, much greater movement more quickly.
Yeah.
With the employment situation that's going on now. It's a whole different world coming out of COVID.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, we're getting close to the end. So is there a high level viewpoint you want to give or advice or anything like that as we close this podcast out?
Yeah, I will. There's three things, and I'll go very quickly. I think if I was a brand new graduate out of any program and I was leaving, these are the three things I would have told myself years ago. And that is one, never pass up the opportunity for training and education. You know, I would say always seek opportunities to become, you know, a leader, a manager, and a better teammate, you know, whether that's your education or doing a new project. And the last, and I'll spend just a few seconds on this, is the last is, you know, start building the habits to achieve balance of life. And that's easier to say than it is to do. But if you start early, it's going to set you up for success throughout life. And I used to love this. Like, we would have senior leaders come and talk at any event I go to. They'd always say, hey, one of the practical experiences, they would say, find balance in your life, you know, get balance in your life and all that. And one of my go-to questions is always, okay, so you said find balance. Hey, can you give me an example? How do you find balance in your life? And what I'd always get back from them was like, well, don't use me as an example. I haven't figured it out, but you need to find balance in your life. So I thought through that quite a bit. Like, how do you find balance in your life? And I think, you know, it's really comes down to like, just really, really quickly, some five things. And it's about prioritization, you know, find your priorities. It's defining what success is for you. It's to communicate with those around you, especially significant others, about, you know, expectations and what you all want to do with your defining success. Work on your schedule and then last, just assess it. So if you can make those five things work for you and do it consistently and start building the habits, then I think finding a balance in your life is actually more achievable.
That's great advice. Well, I want to thank you, Marty, for being on the podcast today.
Yeah, thanks so much. Thanks again for having me. And it's great to be here.
And for the listeners, this was Marty Reynolds. He's the Managing Director of Cybersecurity for Airlines for America. You can find him on LinkedIn if you're looking for him. And I want to thank everybody listening today to the Cap Tech Podcast. This is Capital Technology University. Come visit us either in Laurel, Maryland, or visit us online at captechu.edu. And thanks for listening today.